Okay. Welcome, fellow travelers. Thank you for joining us today for our workshop on Tradition 8, A Guide to the 12 Traditions. Adult children of alcoholics should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. This workshop is being recorded and the audio will be available at a later date. We kindly ask you to please rename yourself using your first name only. You might want to also write where you're from. And take a nice pause of a silent moment, and we will do the serenity prayer. Higher power, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, and I would like to introduce our presenters, our tech hosts, and just mention our pilot group. Presenters are myself from Pennsylvania, Mary Jo from Illinois, and Cheryl from Toronto. We have Dee Dee here as our tech host today. We also have a pilot group that we work with behind the scenes before we bring this to you. Sometimes they're here to join us as well. That would be Marchin, Leslie, Michelle, and Jen. Okay. Next slide is Cheryl.
All right. So today our agenda will include our workshop mission and our intent of the 12 traditions. We'll read our suggested commitment to service and our workshop guidelines. We'll introduce the tradition and have a presentation of a skit. And then we'll go into our discussion, questions, and takeaways, and close with our tradition meditation.
Our mission is to provide education and experience through a series of 12 workshops on how the traditions work to keep our meetings safe and recovery oriented by practicing of the spiritual principles. The next slide. The intent of the 12 traditions. The ACA traditions from the Big Red Book, page 489 and 490, the ACA traditions outline fellowship unity, group autonomy, and the ultimate authority of ACA, a loving higher power as expressed in our group conscience. The ACA traditions frame our leadership style in the language of being a trusted servant. We avoid a style of governance or authority over another. Anonymity coming from love underlines all of the traditions and our group conduct. With the 12 traditions, we sustain ACA groups that allow the ACA solution of reparenting oneself to emerge and thrive. And we will share the reading of the suggested commitment to service from Big Red Book, page 601. I perform service so that my program will be available for myself, and through those efforts, others may benefit. I will perform service and practice my recovery by 1, affirming that the true power of our program rests in the membership of the meetings and is expressed through our higher power and through group conscience. 2, confirming that our process is one of inclusion and not exclusion, showing special sensitivity to the viewpoint of the minority in the process of formulating the group conscience so that any decision is reflective of the spirit of the group and not merely the vote of the majority. And 3, placing principles before personalities. Cheryl?
4, keeping myself fit for service by working my recovery as a member of the program. 5, striving to facilitate the sharing of experience, strength, and hope at all levels. Meetings, intergroups, regional committees, service boards, and world services. 6, accepting the different forms and levels of service and allowing those around me to each function according to their own abilities.
7, remaining willing to forgive myself and others for not performing perfectly. 8, being willing to surrender the position in which I serve in the interest of unity and to provide the opportunity for others to serve, to avoid problems of money, property, and prestige, and to avoid losing my own recovery through the years of use of service to act out my old behavior, especially in taking care of others, controlling, rescuing, being a victim, etc. And 9, remembering I'm a trusted servant, I do not govern.
Our workshop guidelines for today, we will be sharing in a general way. For our purposes today, we kindly ask everyone to focus on the topic being presented so that we may cover all the material. Please remember to employ personalities, principles over personalities, curiosity over criticism, progress, not perfection, service coming from love, and our acronym HALT for humility, acceptance, love, and tolerance. Tradition 8, adult children of alcoholics should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. And our spiritual principle is equality. I'm just going to do a little bit of a reading around that. The spiritual principle behind the traditions are the spiritual principles that we lacked in our families of origin. Therefore, we develop survival skills and laundry list traits in order to survive. By practicing the steps, we're learning to relate to ourselves. And by practicing the spiritual principles of the traditions, we're learning how to relate to others in healthy ways. Go ahead, Erin.
Okay, equality from our Big Red Book, page 529 and 531. A few special workers were hired to run ACA offices and answer telephones. Common sense revealed that they were not professionals benefiting from ACA's name and should be paid comparable wages for their work. Those crossing the line of professionalism tend to involve a therapist who conducts group sessions for adult children, calling the session an ACA meeting and charging the clients for the sessions. Tradition 8 addresses a wide range of issues. The heart of the matter is that the demand for ACA meetings and ACA support is far greater than the number of groups and volunteers we have available to meet the demand. But our members meet that call each day, each week, each month. We do all we can to make ACA available to the greatest number of people. We give our time and our money because we believe in helping one another.
Okay. We're going to move on to a skit. We have two parts. The first part represents a dialogue during a recovery meeting. And part 2 is a dialogue occurring after the meeting. And a reminder, tradition 8, adult children of alcoholics should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. And on to the skit.
I'm Drew.
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead, Erin.
All right. Part 1 represents a dialogue during a recovery meeting. Hi, my name is Drew. I saw information about your group and thought I'd attend one of your meetings. And now I'm really recognizing how a mental health professional like me could take people so much further in their recovery than what they can do in meetings.
Hi, I'm Lee, and I'm new to this meeting. Drew, I'd really like to talk about this because I don't think my therapist really recognizes adult children issues, and that makes me sad and uncomfortable. I wonder if he's the right therapist for me.
Hi, I'm Joe. I want to share next, but first I need to say that I'm feeling unsafe. Can we have a group conscience about reading Tradition 8? The reason I'm bringing this up is that this is not a place for people to promote their business.
Let's have a show of hands. How many would like Tradition 8 read? Okay, the vote is 6 yes, 1 no, 3 abstain. So now I'll read Tradition 8. Adult children of alcoholics should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers.
Thank you. That was helpful for me. Again, I'm Joe. I'd like to share now. I'm a recovering adult child. Having a safe place where I can share my feelings builds trust for me. I have been mistreated by professionals and authority figures, and my trust issues were triggered. This week, I've been dealing with feelings around my ex, who is giving me problems with child support. And scene, and now we will move to part two of this skit on the next slide.
Part two represents a dialogue occurring after the meeting. I appreciate what was said in the meeting about Tradition 8. Now that I understand ACA employs special workers, how do I find out about that?
Well, actually, because we are not a counseling organization, we don't have therapists as employees. Our special workers mainly fulfill the business aspects of the organization. Okay, and scene. All right. Okay, so again, Tradition 8. Adult children of alcoholics should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Okay, so the first question, before we start the questions, while it was difficult to present a skit that would fully get to what this tradition is about, we have included questions as we go further that are meant to look at the whole tradition. And so we're going to move on to the questions, and we will encourage you to answer these questions. Everybody who responds, you'll have up to 2 minutes to speak, whether it's a response to the question or if you have a question yourself. But we'll move on to question one then. What are examples of what's harmful or not harmful shares if someone is a therapist who attends ACA meetings? Anyone? Dee Dee?
Hi, I'm Dee Dee, adult child, amongst other things. And I'm going to set a timer. So I think an example for myself as to what would be harmful during an ACA meeting is if someone were to share that they were a therapist. I think that would be critical for them to remain anonymous with their profession as well as their last name. Keeping my last name helps me feel safe. Keeping my profession would help keep others safe as well as myself. I'm not a therapist. However, I would think that would fall under the category of feeling safe in a meeting and not promoting, definitely not promoting myself as a therapist if I were one. That's my share. Thank you.
Thank you, Dee Dee. Arjun?
Hi, everybody. Sorry, an adult child. It's my answer here. Not about the share, but what happens during the share. That was in one of the first two anonymous 12-step meetings in my town, Narcotics Anonymous, that was. And the father of the meeting chair was a therapist or a social worker, not a therapist. And this man would interrupt our shares, saying, "Come to me after the meeting, then I'll note your identification stuff, and I will file for a government grant so that I can work for you for that government grant as payment." That's really harmful. The meetings were not for our recovery. The meetings were for his income. And he did not, he would not be benefited by our recovery, of course. He would need us for him. for his income. Thank you.
Thank you, Arjun. I think one of the dangers too is that people could, in the meeting, could potentially make them authority figures, which we don't have authority figures in our program. We're not supposed to have them, especially in our meetings and so on. We have trusted servants, but not authority figures. When we were brainstorming this, we said therapists should just say no. I'm not here to promote my services, and you shouldn't even know I'm a therapist. Erin?
I think the other thing that comes up is feeling like when there's a mental health professional in the room that's advertising themselves as a mental health professional, is the feeling that I'm being judged or analyzed. And I am one of the people who was abused as a 15-year-old teenager, very abused by mental health professionals. So it definitely can trigger and look to me.
Thank you, Erin. Arjun?
Yeah, this time a good example. Nowadays, I also go to an online meeting where a therapist is part of the meeting. And during her work, she came to the insight that she had the same troubles that she would like to help other people with. But realization means also that the realization that she can't help others if she need not. We cannot first help herself. And this person brings a lot of knowledge to the meeting and is completely renewing her experience with that knowledge. Mm-hmm. So that is very helpful to the meeting, the knowledge, but experience is completely renewing for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Arjun. Erin?
Adding to what I said, my dogs were going to interrupt. The fact that someone is a mental health professional in the meetings and does not need to advertise that actually makes me even feel safe. Because I get that even if I know that they are, that because they're not advertising it, that they're basically saying that they are an adult child. They're there for them, you know. On the other hand, we had a psychologist who used to be in our meeting a lot, and she would never say that. And I happened to know that from getting to know her. And I felt even more trustful of her. I felt even more trustful, you know, when I wanted to talk to her, because I got that she was an adult child. I got that she was very serious about her recovery. And the fact that she wasn't putting her ego or her profession or her wallet out there was very, very nice. So I pass.
Thank you, Erin. Okay, let's move on to the next question. So question two, slide. What is a special worker and why do we have them? So this is moving into the special worker category. What is a special worker? We talked about it a little bit going into the skit, but what is a special worker? Anybody? Well, actually a special worker, okay, go ahead, Erin.
I was gonna say you can go ahead, Mary Jo.
No, I was just gonna say our special workers are paid employees. And we employ special workers when we don't have enough volunteers or consistent volunteers to do the work, or we have lack of certain skill sets within the volunteer community to get certain types of things done, or in some cases we need professional help like accountants and so on. So although in most cases they are an outside organization that we hire. Go ahead, Erin, if you had something else.
Nope.
Okay. Because there's the business side to the fellowship that has to rely on consistency. So all of us on this call volunteer in some way in the organization, but this is not our job. So go ahead, Needy.
Hi, everyone. I believe maybe some clerical positions may be special workers, people that work in mailing out literature from the main offices. I believe maybe special workers.
Yes.
You stated, Mary Jo, a special worker is someone that gets paid to do a function for the organization.
Right.
Thank you.
We currently, WSO, I think, currently has, I believe 7 or 8 special workers. I could be wrong, but we have 4 or 5 people in the office, and then we have people who work remotely. Erin, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to add to some of that. Triggering my memory, we have a board secretary now. That was a very, very huge, huge job for a volunteer to do. We now have IT special worker. Mary Jo, help me out with all the different ones that we do have now.
I think we still have, do we have a literature special worker? We did. And I think we still do. And then we have
a general manager in the office.
Yeah, and we have 4 special workers in the office besides him. Yeah, doing various jobs. Laura?
Hi there, good morning.
Good morning.
I think a special worker is, someone who's paid to work for World Services mm-hmm. or possibly a region, who knows, mm-hmm. someday. But I would think that they would handle, like, the consistency would be so important, like the controller or someone who would handle like HR matters or something that's more private in nature, confidential maybe. That would be a good idea,
Mm-hmm.
But I think there needs to be a careful balance whenever considering hiring a special worker. Is it something that a volunteer can't do, because we have to manage our purse strings too and our budget and live within our means. It's so important.
Absolutely. Thanks, Laura.
Yeah, and there's also, the temporary kind of special workers when we need an attorney to discuss certain matters. Financial things and legal things. So, but those are more, kind of as needed or retained. Right. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, let's move to question 3. What might happen if we pay professionals to carry the ACA message for us? In other words, what if we hire therapists or people to carry the message? What might happen? What is there an upside or a downside to that? As opposed to those of us who we carry the message just by being in the program and doing the work we do as volunteers and attending meetings and so on. Erin.
This question reminds me of different scenarios similar to that in terms of carrying the message, but obviously the first thing that comes to mind is if you're paid to carry the message and you're a spokesperson and you're known, to the media, you're known publicly, and you're, in a relapse and really acting out of control, it's like, that who you are reflects on who we are. And that view to the public in terms of, trying to attract, not promote, how that might hurt the fellowship. It also reminds me of, bumper stickers and stuff where, if I'm advertising that I am this adult child in some way, and then I'm there having road rage or something, you know, it's that same thing, like carrying the message. If I was a paid professional doing that, and how it affects the fellowship.
Thank you, Erin. Thank you. Arjun?
I have an example actually outside the program. When I was board member in psychiatry, we're a struggling project, struggling each and every year to get the fee for the idea man behind the project, the one and only professional. If he couldn't, he would work for free. And for the remainder, many volunteers to care for the project and patients. And whenever someone would be in suicide, depression, or psychosis, he would not be left alone, not a minute. If it would take all night, all day, 2 days, we would not leave the person until we would make sure he was out of the depression or handed over to the clinic for commitment into the clinic. Then we became an example for our national government to create this project in all cities. And suddenly we got millions. And with those millions, many professionals came into the project who've never heard of our project before. And at 5 o'clock, they said, "It's 5 o'clock, we close now. Goodbye." So suicides shot up from zero in 15 years to 2 or 3 months with barely 100 people. So then I finally said, I pulled the plug and called the institutes, and I knew I was not allowed into the project if the
institute. Gentle 30-second reminder.
Thank you. If the institutes would create their version of the project, I would not be allowed in there. Many of my friends would not be allowed in there. But that was better than the project that it had became with the new professionals. And the new project from the institutes, again, was completely a volunteer project. No paid workers, and that's the way.
Thank you, Arjun, and that's an experience from the Netherlands. I appreciate that. Thank you. Didi?
Hi, Didi here. I had to really think about this one because this would lead the fellowship of ACA to go against all traditions and even some of the steps, because our fellowship is focused on attraction rather than promotion. And I'm trying to focus my thoughts here. So going outside and promoting would be in violation of the traditions and what the whole fellowship is about. Learning how to recover in the 12-step program is important to me, and knowing that I can trust the fellowship as with the traditions in protecting and establishing boundaries for the fellowship as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dee Dee. Erin?
Tagging on to what Dee Dee was saying, the desire to recover, you know, there's a paid professional. What is the desire there? Was it the desire to make money, or is it the desire to recover? And the other tradition, as you said, with attraction, not promotion. So, and tradition 5 as well. Just running through all those and seeing how it affects the traditions.
Thank you. Yeah, we go through these phases are in the program where people, you know, there's this desire to get their word out to more people, which is really important, but we have the traditions for a reason, And so to sort of cross the line and hire people to promote the program and so on, those of us in the program, we carry the message from our heart, not because we're being paid to tell people about it. And so it's in my experience, it's always been important to stay with that model that we share our experience, strength, and hope. And yes, maybe more people would find the program if we had this big way of promoting it, and we had TV shows about it and so on, but then it would also be problematic in the rooms, I think. So thank you. Let's move on to question 4. And question 4, why is it important that the Big Red Book says on page 528, each ACA member is equal to the next and has an equal voice regardless of job status or career track? Why is that important? When you're sitting in a meeting, does it matter to you what the next person does for a living? Aaron?
What comes to mind for me is if I'm putting that person more on a pedestal, or if they're coming in to be put on a pedestal, and if somebody has a career that socially is kind of put on a pedestal or thought of as more important, going back to the traditions and the concept of identifying with each other, that if one person is feeling unequal to another person, then I can't really identify. And the principle of equality, the principle of trust, it is diminished.
Thank you. Dee Dee?
This is a great question because of these traditions, and especially tradition 8, this reminds me that I'm in a safe place, that whether I am multiple degreed or not, we are all equal when we come in, having one ultimate goal, and that is recovery and building a relationship with my higher power as well. Because knowing that I'm equal and that no one governs, just kind of, I can take a deep breath and say, okay, I can set my ego aside and just be me. And so that's what I gather from this question, is coming in and feeling safe. I don't have to prove myself to anyone. I can just be authentic and share my experience, strength, and hope, and learn. And that's what these traditions are teaching me, is how to carry myself in a way that is respectful for myself as well as others. Thank you.
Thank you, Dee Dee. The anonymity of the program is so important. If I get my self-esteem from what I do, one of the reasons I'm in this program is to take care of that, to work through that, and to get my self-esteem from being me. And so if I'm focused on what I do and want others to focus on what I do, then I'm undermining my own recovery. If there's people in the meeting who have are in certain professions that I find, this is sort of a double-edged sword, if I have authority figure issues with that profession, I might put them on a pedestal, or I might bow to their opinion or whatever. But also if I stick with it and I understand, I can also use that potentially as a way to work through it. But it's better that I work through it in different ways. I don't have to work through it because there's a doctor in the room and I have authority figure issues with doctors. Some of us may be more highly educated than others, but it doesn't make us healthier from what we grew up with. And so, it's just better that I don't know. And I've worked with people through, or been with people through the years in meetings where they seem to be fixated on that, on what they do. But gratefully, most of them stuck around long enough to get past that. Others, if that's where all their self-esteem and their identity is tied up, then they may or may not stay around. So yeah, we are equal. Each of us has the same voice, an equal voice, an opportunity to speak. So, and that's actually one thing that we say in one of my meetings, or all my meetings actually, when we time our shares and we say, we will now have unlike in our families of origin, we will now each have an equal opportunity to speak. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Hi, my name's Cheryl. I wanted to add, when I'm sitting in a room, I want to connect with the adult child that's sitting in the room. I don't want to connect to the, lawyer, doctor, clerk, or whatever they may be. Additionally, I may be an adult child who's judgmental. And if I'm sitting there and I know everybody's profession or what they do, and let's say I have a judgment about that profession, it disconnects me from their adult child story, their experience, strength, and hope, because I may shut them down because I'm not humble enough. So this statement in the BRB is so helpful for the judgmental side of the adult child that, may close their ears to listening to someone just because they're judging them by what they do, because of whatever traumas they may have experienced in life. And so I love that the BRB says this, because I can come in with a level of humility and be open to receiving the message and not negating the message for the messenger and that sort of thing. So a lot of humility comes with this statement for me. And I'm so grateful that it states it. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Cheryl. Erin?
The other side of this is when I think of someone who has a profession and they don't share it, and the significance of that, because if it's a profession that can be misused actually by members in terms of constantly seeking that person out for advice about things, and therefore it's disrupting that member's opportunity to just be an adult child and be there at the meeting for one reason. So the flip side being that someone is not saying what they do, but people know what they do, and then we as members kind of misuse that person and their reason for being there.
Thank you, Erin. Okay. All right, thank you. Let's move on to question 5. How would a group deal with a member who continually mentions their profession in their share? Now, we've already talked about, I think we have a consensus that we really don't we're not in favor of this happening, but what if we do? We have someone who continually does that, no matter what their profession is. How can we deal with that as a group or otherwise? Or has anybody experienced this? One thing is, it could be brought up at a business meeting, but we would encourage this to be done from a space of acceptance and love, not from blame, but otherwise, also from a place of acceptance and love. Two or more willing people could talk to that individual after the meeting and remind them that personal and professional anonymity. And if you did that, what would an example be of that you could give this person about why not to do it based on some of the stuff we've already talked about? Erin?
Thinking of the things that we did talk about, if I were talking to someone with a fellow traveler, and the reason being with a fellow traveler so that whatever communication did happen doesn't get distorted, so that there was nobody there, for example, to support me. Like if I said something to somebody and it was taken the wrong way, that conversation's only between that person, and then that gets blown out of proportion if there's somebody else there with me and both of us are coming from love, concern, the traditions. Like you said, so many of the different things that we already mentioned here, that, you know, we want to be able to identify with each other. We want to be attracted to the other person because of our stories, not because of our professions. Because we want to feel trusting of each other, and then kind of saying that, you know, we, you know, our experience is that we all want that when we come here, and that when we even promote ourselves as something else, then other people may use you inappropriately. So coming from that, it's a real concern for that member's recovery, as well as the concern for the group. I pass.
Thank you, Erin. Dee Dee?
Hi. My thought goes straight to first defining anonymous, because when I first came into program, I thought that anonymity just meant my name and where I lived. But in fact, it also means keeping certain parts of my life private, such as my profession. So my profession is included in that anonymity. Now, how would I discuss it with someone? You know, that is, you know, being in recovery, that's one thing that normally I would want to avoid, right? Because I certainly don't want to offend anyone, or I don't want to make myself their higher power or judge. However, I think guiding towards the tradition and defining anonymity, and maybe, certainly in meetings or in conversation, and using my own personal experience, strength, and hope. Oh yeah, that reminds me, anonymity is not only keeping my name private or my profession, but it also includes my profession. And I maybe would approach it that way, based on my own personal experience, strength, and hope. And, you know, I don't know if there's a right way or a wrong way, but that would be my thoughts on that. Thank you, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Dee Dee. I mean, I think when we start out, if we have that conversation, two people having a conversation with that person after the meeting, it also that we start out with, we're really glad to have you here, and making it clear that they're a welcome member of the ACA community. It's that we don't promote our professions within the meeting. We're not a captive audience for a sales program, so to speak. Erin?
You know, coming from the place of identification, and as you were just saying, you know, approaching the person with love and concern for their recovery, but also to remind them that as ACAs, we tend to be people that come from self-doubt. So when I hear you are a certain a profession that I put on a pedestal, then I may feel less than. And that expressing that to a person who sincerely cares and wants to be there and wants to share, you know, to give and receive from the program, can help them realize, oh, wow, I don't want to have that effect on people. Mm-hmm. Passing.
Okay. Thank you, Erin. Arjun?
Yeah, I would like to share, but that's not always so black and white. Mm-hmm. One person joining ACA and many other 12-step versions of the program that are present in my town actually also became board member of one of my town's meeting centers. And for him, this was important to assert himself with difficulties that were going on in ACA for the Netherlands and Belgium. He would identify himself with this. This is a volunteer job, being board member in such a project. So it's not a paid profession. And so there, it's not black and white, it's gray area twofold, because it's not a paid profession, but also because he needed that to identify and assert himself. Thank you.
Thank you, Arjun. Okay. Cheryl?
Hi, thank you. I wanted to add, approaching someone who is constantly leading their share with their profession. Another way to approach when with another person is possibly to ask them, speak from the I, first of all, like if I was approaching them, is to say, I feel, like this is what I feel, I'm concerned. Ask them if I can comment on their share, sometimes reminding them, because maybe they don't even realize that they're leading their share with their profession. And also giving them a solution might help too, like, you know, hi, my name is, I'm an adult child, opposed to hi, my name is, I'm, you know, PhD of whatever, or, you know, psychologist or grief counselor or whatever. That may help, is offering a solution when approaching them and speaking from the I, my concern. And I tend to cite the BRB. So there's really no argument usually when you put the BRB in front and then you have the literature speaking to it. So it detaches. It's not me talking about it. It's like, here's what the literature does say in case they have not met that in the BRB yet. That's helped when I've had to deal with this situation as well. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you. Okay, let's move on to question 6. So how can the spiritual principle of equality for tradition 8 be reflected in our personal recovery? T, to me, right off, what comes to mind is that just when I came into the program, I did have problems with authority figures and feeling like I wasn't as good as other people. And so the idea of equality, reminding myself that that I'm equal to other people. We may do different things. We may have different skill sets, but we are all well, I want to say something besides equal, but we all have our talents and our skills and our and whatever. But we each have the right to be in that meeting, right to be wherever we are. It really, for me, helps me stay focused when I'm in a group of people, especially outside of the meeting, that where there may be people of other professions and so on, or just different groups. So it carries over into my personal life. Any other thoughts? Dee Dee.
Hi, thanks. Wow, great question. Just bringing the word spirituality reminds me in the question, reminds me that my recovery is between my higher power and myself. And my higher power reminds me that as a child of my higher power, I choose, is actually in charge, and not any one person, not myself, not anyone else. We are all equals. We are all, there's my 30 seconds. And so just refocusing on my individual recovery, respecting others where they're at in their recovery, and just keeping that between my higher power and myself. And so that kind of grounds me. Just the word spiritually grounds me and keeps me back within myself, and respecting others' boundaries as well as myself, mine. Thank you. I'll pass.
Thank you, Dee Dee. Erin?
Thank you. I love this question because for me, the spiritual principles of the traditions were how I found what my higher power meant to me after many years of searching for what was it for me. And the specific principle of equality reminds me in my spiritual practice to be balanced in terms of being praised leads. It overpraising leads to disgrace, like those two, praise and disgrace, trying to stay in the middle, because with anonymity as the thread that runs through all of the traditions, these principles in terms of what I talked about earlier with self-doubt and feeling less than, when I am practicing equality in my meetings with other people, I'm actually building my confidence and not coming from ego, the pedestal, thinking of the concept of, if I put somebody on a pedestal, there's only one place for them or me, if I'm on that pedestal, to go, and that is falling off. So there's, again, that balance of praise and disgrace. Coming from a family of my father, who was a rager and a bigot, at one time really fighting super far against that, again, balance with anonymity, with equality. It just keeps me grounded in what is my higher purpose, my higher power. Trust is another thing that comes out of equality as well for me. So
gentle 30 seconds.
And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Arjun?
I'd like to elaborate more on the gray area. It did not just stop for the person and his profession or his volunteer work. It's also for me, being service member for meetings in several versions of the program, including SCA, and being a friend of this person, I was tasked to address the matter with him for several meetings. And doing so, I've been both good and treating him bad. Yeah. And still it goes further, that gray area. Sometimes when in my eyes, in the eyes of many, I've been treating him good for addressing this matter, he would perceive it as being threatening to him. And otherwise, surprisingly, when I thought I was treating him bad, he could perceive that as harsh, but just and fair. So, yeah, that gray area is very large and can overlap many, many subjects and people. Thank you.
Thank you, Artem. This has been making me think about, you know, I can appreciate what other people do and can do and their skills and their innate abilities to do different kinds of things that don't come second nature to me. And that's important for me to be able to do, because this is also reminding me, whether it's a little bit on topic or off topic, I don't know, but how I came into the program measuring my insides by other people's outsides, and that I always came up as not as good, because I thought that they were better than me. And this extends even to, I have a couple of siblings who are very artistic, and they were able to turn it into that, their abilities into businesses. And I always thought, well, they're smarter than me, they're better than me. You know, what happened? I'm the oldest, I'm supposed to be, you know, all of these things, whatever. But then eventually being able to recognize that we're all artistic in different ways. Just not, I can't draw a picture, I can't, whatever, that resembles what it's supposed to be necessarily, but I'm artistic in my own way, and that we all are. And so, again, I can appreciate what others do and what they bring to the table. And I do. And I'm grateful for the fact that we all have different skills.
10 to 30 seconds.
But we are equal in voice when it comes to this program and in life. So with that, I think we'll move to the next slide, which is about, does anybody have any additional thoughts or takeaways from this tradition before we close our session for today? Not session, workshop. This has not been a therapy session. Let me do. Any additional thoughts or takeaways?
Good, because I'm not paying you, Mary Jo.
Check's in the mail. I just want to say thank you. I think that this was very thought-provoking, the questions, and I'm very grateful. Thank you.
Thanks, Dee Dee. All right.
Thank you for being our special worker here today, just by your presence.
Yes, Dee Dee, thank you. Dee Dee, as our tech host, thank you.
How much do we owe you, Dee Dee?
Okay, well, then I'm going to turn things over to Cheryl.
Thank you, Mary Jo. So our resources, we can be contacted at traditions@acawso.org. And this recording, as well as the previous workshops, are located on our RED website, adultchildren.org, at the traditions-workshops. And our Zoom information for the future workshops are located on our blue website, acawso.org, under events. that is where you'll find that information. And if not, please email us and we'll get that information to you if you can't find it. And our seventh tradition contribution, remembering every ACA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Your contribution is a critical part of maintaining WSO services and delivering the message to the adult child who still suffers. And you can go to our RED website, theadultchildren.org, under seventh tradition to offer a contribution. Thank you. And may we have a volunteer to read our tradition meditation?
May I?
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you. Tradition 8 meditation. Higher power, remind me that the direction of our program comes from the ACA members and the groups. Remind me that we must make our own decisions. Guide us as we discuss the need to hire special workers that will help us fulfill ACA's primary purpose. Grant us the wisdom to make the best decision for our groups, service structure, and our fellowship as a whole. Thank you for letting me serve.
Thank you, Dee Dee, for your service. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today. That concludes our workshop.